Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
It's Friday, and as you get ready to wrap up your work week, it's time for an all-new edition of Listen In with KNN. Now, on today's edition of Listen In with KNN, I'm bringing in DMV sports royalty, yes, the cream of the crop here in the DMV sports scene, as I welcome in the one and only Mr. Mike Wise to the show. And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag Listen In with KNN.
It's time to recognize those individuals that are doing good in the community and making a difference in the sports world. Without further ado, Kelsey presents this week's Do Good Sportsperson Award nominee.
Now, as I like to do every single show, it's time for Kelsey's Do Good Sports Organization of the Week. Now, today I'm honoring an organization entitled Play Hard, Give Back. Again, that's Play Hard, Give Back. Now, if you haven't heard about them yet, I'm about to tell you all the great stuff they do because they're an organization that really should be on your watch list. I'm awarding them for merging snacks, trail mix specifically, and athletes to make a difference. Wow, trail mix and athletes, who would have thought? One snack at a time, they have been able to build homes for families in need in Mexico and provide meals to hungry children within the United States school system. It's a five-year-old company based in Ketchum, Idaho, that leverages the power of sports and the influence of athletes to make the world, what, a better place. Now, Spencer Brindell is a former college hockey player. He got this idea with his father, Jeff. And guess what? Inside a Winnebago, of all places, during a father-son trip that they took back in 2012. Now, today, many people say, you know, wow, they're pretty much leading a renaissance with dried fruit and raw nuts. But it has a huge purpose, and it's something that a lot of athletes have attached onto. You have athletes like pro skiers Lexi DuPont and Julian Carr, who are also all in on this company. That doesn't just nourish the body, it also fuels social change around the world. And I think we all know the world could use some social change. So congrats again to Play Hard, Give Back for earning honors as this week's Kelsey's Do Good Sports Organization of the Week. Presented right here on Listen In with KNN on Fox Sports Radio, 1340 AM and 96.9 FM. It's now time for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back with our special guest.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch, and if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when...
Welcome back to Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now that time to get into the show rundown and welcome in our special guest, ESPN senior writer for The Undefeated, Mr. Mike Wise. Mike, how are you?
Kelsey, good to hear you.
I'm so excited to have you on. I don't know how I got into your busy schedule, but it's a true honor and privilege to have someone like you on the show. I've been following your work for so long. So thanks again for coming on.
Whenever you say so long, it just makes me feel old. But I'm really happy to be here.
You're still young in my book.
Yeah, you can enlighten me. That'd be good. All right.
No, this is going to be great. And for those that don't know you, Mike is a former sports columnist at the Washington Post. So, yes, everyone here in the DMV should know him very well. He's also a former NBA columnist and feature writer for the New York Times. And he also worked at the Sacramento Union newspaper. And he's a graduate of California State University in Fresno. So, Mike, I mean, how has everything been in D.C. for you? What's going on new with you with the Undefeated?
Well, I mean, the trade deadline stuff so crazy with Cleveland, But and that, and you know, the site is very excited about a couple of things, including a special that they're doing from Birmingham. And shoot, it's, you know, what has it been up like a year and a half now?
Yeah, can you believe that?
Oh, crazy. I mean, when I came on, obviously there was so much drama. I didn't know when it was going to launch or if. And
right.
Now I feel like it's carved out a little niche for itself.
I mean, I feel like I see it all the time on social media, and I feel like it's really become a source for people to get news from. And then I like that you guys do those stories that I think some people are afraid to talk about, because I think we know you guys intersect race, culture, and sports, and especially that race part. Sometimes people are scared to talk about that. So I love that you guys bring that up. But I just want to know from you, I mean, has it been everything you thought it would be when you first signed on?
Well, I think I was, like anybody would be, when I signed on in 2015, there was a promise that it was going to get going pretty soon. So I was almost disenchanted for a year. And Jason Whitlock was obviously pulled off the project. And we went through a period in which, Kelsey, we didn't know whether we were going to launch or not.
Right,
And everybody there felt like the seven employees that were there at the time felt like the island of misfit toys. Like, when is Santa going to pick us up so we can make magic? And so when Kevin Marita of the Washington Post, my former colleague, came aboard as the managing editor there, and he became the editor-in-chief of The Undefeated, there was a sense that, you know, he'd had some managing experience, and he was given clearly a bigger budget. Mm-hmm. And after, you know, I just remember the first day, you know, Lynn Mae O'Neill, my colleague, she was on SportsCenter. She had done a piece on Marshawn Lynch. And it was just a personal piece, but I remember her when she showed up on SportsCenter. Literally, the Undefeated newsroom felt like it was the closest thing to a missile launch at NASA. We're like, wow, we did it, we got the excitement. And so even though ESPN is a huge company and is our parent company, and we weren't a typical startup in many ways, especially for us that had been there for a while, it felt like that. And so when you got past all that that initial excitement, there was a period of, okay, now we got to work. Now we got to put
right. You got to put the words to action.
And I feel like, you know, over the last year and a half, I'm very happy with some of the work I've done. I'm very happy with some of the work my colleagues have done. Obviously, you can't rest on any laurels, but as it is, you know, for all the topsy turviness that is ESPN right now, I feel like there was some stability at the Undefeated.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what it seems like. It seems like you guys just continue to grow and get stronger. I know one of your latest pickups was Miss Jemele Hill. I mean, how has that been since she's joined the Undefeated? I know she just started, but I mean, how big of a pickup was that for the Undefeated?
Well, that was like getting Kevin Durant in free agency.
Basically, right?
but she wasn't a free agent. She's still under the ESPN umbrella. I haven't been in the D.C. office lately because too much information, but my wife and I just had a little baby girl. And
oh, my gosh, congratulations.
Thank you. And I've been on a little extended paternity leave. But I'm getting back into it with the trade deadline. So I haven't even been in the office. I don't know if Jemele stepped foot in there yet. I'm sure when she does, there will be half of it will be like a party. Because obviously Jemele's got a heck of a reputation, and she's been around for a while, and she feels like she's got something to say. So I think we're all waiting for her to hear what she has to say.
Yeah, I thought that was it was wonderful. So, Mike, I mean, keep up the great work that you're doing. I'm so excited for your family growing. Who knows, maybe your little baby girl one day will be following in your footsteps and working at the Undefeated. Only time will tell.
Well, or she'll find a career that really makes her not one of the table nine losers and a wedding singer. No, whatever she grows up to be, I just want to be there to see it.
Oh, that is so wonderful and well said. Well, Mike, I'm ready to get into it with you. I love your energy and your enthusiasm. I always kick it off with my Doing It Big in the DMV segment, where, of course, I talk about the sports teams here in the area, and I want to talk about the Washington Wizards because they've been in the news a lot lately for the wrong and the right reasons. The Wizards, they did just end a 5-game win streak on Tuesday when they lost in Philadelphia to the 76ers, 115-102, but they still do sit at fourth in the Eastern Conference. But I think we all know what everyone's been talking about, and that's kind of been the drama and the beef that it seems like the Wizards are having right now. now of John Wall out and him kind of feeling like he's being attacked almost by the team. We know him and Gortat haven't probably been on the friendliest terms because Marchand and Gortat did send out a tweet basically when the Wizards were winning, basically saying they were playing great team basketball, and he put that in quotes. And then, of course, John Wall took offense to that, and this week he's been on media tours basically addressing that, saying, hey, I'm a team player. He said, I mean, he's the reason he said he gives Gortat a lot of the baskets because he feels like he's that person that constantly gives Gortat those assists. So he doesn't understand where those comments are coming from. So I just kind of want to hear from you, Mike. I mean, what do you think is going on in this locker room right now with the Washington Wizards? And, I mean, why does it seem like a lot of people are feeling like they're playing better without John Wall?
So the quickest answer is, I mean, the quickest question to you is, has Marchand Gortat fessed up to that's exactly who he was talking about when he italicized or capitalized team?
So he actually said, of course, it was not directed at John Wall, but John Wall said he felt it was because the time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's just crazy to me that anybody, Marchand Gortat included, could postulate that the Wizards are a better team without John Wall.
Right.
Without John Wall and Marchand Gortat running the pick and roll to perfection at times, mm-hmm. Marchand Gortat is not making the money he makes, nor
right.
is he making the nor is he playing as long as he does because he'd be thought as a weak defender against big men that mm-hmm. Still gets rebounds, but because John Wall has essentially used his pick and pop abilities.
Right.
He's a much better player, and he's much more valuable to them. So I don't if Marchand Gortat, I'll ask him. I mean, I'll see him, but I'll ask him. But if he's just specifically referring to John Wall, that's a mistake on 20
right.
different levels. I think that there was a malaise over the team that was happening for a while that they needed to move the ball, irrespective of who was on the floor.
Right.
And so I don't think that controversy's got legs just because. I don't think anybody thinks John Wall is a selfish player in basketball
mm-hmm.
or in that organization. So
right.
that one would shock me.
Right.
I just can't. I don't know. I don't buy that one. Maybe John Wall dominates the ball a little, and
right.
and they want to move
but
it a little
you could
more.
Say that about all superstars, right? I mean, any superstar
right.
in
that's
a team, they're going to control the ball.
Yeah, yeah at some point the Celtics are going to get tired of Kyrie dominating the basketball.
Right there,
as,
you go. Another
as marvelous as he is to watch.
Right.
So I think that's just part and parcel. And look, the blessing in disguise in this is that the Wizards have been forced to actually play their games and move up to a different level without John Wall on the floor. And if that means
right.
moving the ball, that's fine. This organization right now cannot be stagnant, especially
right.
with the moves that Cleveland made, especially with the fact that Boston is trying to run away with the East. I just think that there is a window here, and this window for all these franchises, Kelsey, it's not very large because,
right.
to be honest, John Wall and Bradley Beal aren't young guys anymore. They're getting up there, and they're entering their primes if they're not already in them. And once you're in your prime, you have about a 5 to 7 year window to make all your dreams come true in this league. And if their dream is to win a championship, and I believe it is, you're still not close to that.
Right, and I think I agree with every point that you made. I just feel like they can't have all this backlash and things going back and forth. You never want to hear about problems in the locker room because, of course, I think you see that on the court. And, yes, they have been winning, but I've been telling everybody, Mike, it's crazy to think that they're better without John Wall. We know how great of a player he is for this franchise, but I think you made a great point in the sense that, yes, all the players have had to step out now without him. And I know before Thursday night's game between the Wizards and the Celtics, Kyrie kind of said the Celtics had to do the same thing essentially when Gordon Hayward went down, which we all remember. They're not saying, of course, that
yeah,
they're
that was a
weird.
Another blessing in disguise. A lot of young players
mm-hmm.
Got to step up and do some things that they they wouldn't have had to had Gordon Hayward been there. But to think that the Celtics can knock off the Warriors in 6 or 7
right.
games without Gordon Hayward or without rosters comprised, I don't see it. Maybe some other people in Boston do, but I don't see it. And I think the Wizards are probably still a playoff team without John Wall, but
right.
it's a lot like Oklahoma City losing Kevin Durant. They were,
yeah.
As great as Russell Westbrook was on his way to an MVP season, Kelsey, they were
right.
one round and out, and the most exciting player that I'd seen in a while in the postseason was suddenly gone
in early May, and it didn't feel right. And so I hate to see that, you know, I hate to see people get into that mindset that somehow John Wall is holding it with his back. I also think that, you know, in the flow of any season, guys are just, they're gonna speak out, you know, and they just are. It's just where
right.
we are now.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the Wizards aren't the only team, you know, we see this with, and we're going to get into it later when we talk about the Cavaliers, but obviously we also see some disgruntlement in their locker room. So, I mean, I think it happens all over, but I just hate to see it, especially when John Wall's out after getting knee surgery. You know, the last thing you want is him, you know, having to worry about, you know, this. And it's funny because I love how everyone brought up, like, how are they going to say that after he bought them all Rolexes? Everyone's like, we thought everything was good when John Wall did that. But, of course, I mean, I think the Wizards are still playing good basketball. They do need to learn how to win without him. I'm like you. I think they will still be a playoff team in the East, but I think, of course, when he comes back, you know, he'll be vital to helping them make that run, hopefully in the playoffs. But
yeah.
You made a good point. You said John Wall might be playing in his prime right now. So I just, some people are scared that when he comes back from this knee injury, and of course it's been something that he's dealt with before, I mean, do you think he'll be that same type of explosive player that, you know, he's known to be as a point guard?
I think as they get older in every surgery, it doesn't matter if you're Kobe, Bryant, whoever, I think you lose a little bit.
Right.
But I look at what Kobe came back from. He was a very successful player. He, in a weird way, you evolve as a player. I mean, I know having played at a very small junior college level, I hate that I know the things about the game that I do now because, shoot, who knows? I could have, like, went to a really small Division III college and been bad and been the eighth man on the bench. But,
mm-hmm.
but what I guess I'm getting at is, like, you learn more about the game. You learn more about your body. John Wall is going to find some things out over the next few years when he slows down that, you know, and he's found them out already that he can't, it's wonderful to be considered the fastest guy with a basketball on the floor in the
right.
NBA,
mm-hmm.
but does it get you where you want to go? The thing mm-hmm. that gets you where you want to go is an economy of movement, and you don't just rest your bones, but you figure out trajectories and angles around the basket and outside the key that you never did before because you just relied on your athleticism and your speed.
Right.
And so, in a weird way, I think John Wall becomes a better basketball player and he becomes more of a cerebral basketball player than he just becomes this instinctual guy that just, I'm going to blow by you.
And I still think
right.
he's going to have that in his game, by the way. I don't think that's leaving his game anytime soon. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, with everybody, whether, you know, it's Allen Iverson or whatever, they slowed down at some point.
Right. I mean, we all get older, right? It's just part of the game. And then injuries are going to happen. And I think you're right. I think it'll just change his game, but he'll still be the great John Wall and a great basketball player that we all know here in Washington. I think that everyone knows across the league. And staying on John Wall and Bradley Beal, and we talked about the trade deadline a bit earlier, and I know this is something you actually already tweeted about, but Max Kellerman said on First Take that he felt they might have to trade John Wall or Bradley Beal. Of course, we know as of Thursday, that did not happen. The only trade that the Wizards did make was Sheldon Mack to Atlanta for a protected second-round pick. It moved up a roster spot, and, of course, it moved up, freed up some cash space. But it seemed like a lot of people weren't too happy with Ernie Grunfeld and seeing that the Wizards didn't make any big moves at the trade deadline. Do you think this was the right decision?
I think Ernie Grunfeld is going to be savaged until they either come within a game of the NBA Finals or
mm-hmm.
it just he's been here 15 years. Ted Leonsis, as you know, Kelsey, doesn't appoint general managers. He appoints Supreme Court nominees. And therefore, Ernie will probably outlast Ruth Bader Ginsburg at this point. But, you know, a lot of people aren't, you know, but my thing is this, you know, if you're that close, do you blow up the ship? I guess you do if you're Cleveland because you're afraid you're going to lose LeBron James.
Right.
But if you're the Wizards and you got all these guys under contract, do you really reinvent the wheel at the trading deadline? I wouldn't. Maybe, you know what, I take it back. I deal for a strong bench scorer, maybe a perimeter wing defender, and somebody to really shore you up for any kind of playoff run in the East. But I don't think you go crazy. I just don't.
Right.
That's just me.
Right. So you feel like the Wizards do have a team right now, you know, that can, I think we all know here in Washington, I think you know this very well, Mike, I think we always know they're going to be in the Eastern Conference playoffs. I mean, the Wizards are not a bad team, but I think the question we always have, of course, is will they ever get to that championship level and will they ever win it? And I think that's what the problem is. And I think that's why everyone here, you know, is like, well, what do we do? And of course, right, we saw Cleveland and their thing is pretty much to trade everyone to see what would work best. But it seems like the Wizards, you know, it's never a big trade, but it also seems like they're having trouble bringing big name players here. And I think, of course, that's another problem they've been having. But I don't think they're a bad team. I think if Bradley Beal continues to step up, I know they believe a lot in Kelly Oubre. I've heard only positive things from the organization about him. And, of course, Otto Porter needs to stay strong, and Markieff Morris, I think, also is another player that needs to step up. And I think the Wizards hopefully can, you know, do better than years past. Instead of constantly being that same team, it seems like every year as of years prior, you know, how they play in the playoffs, it seems like it's always the same result here in Washington. And I know
I just think that the East is so wide open. The East is so wide open. It's I don't think Boston's some supreme team as much as I like them.
Right.
I don't think the Cavs are made you know, a plethora of moves. They jettisoned half their roster, but and I think they become more younger and a little more athletic. They got some more energy, but are they front and center right now in the East? I don't think so. So I think if you don't get to the Eastern Conference Finals and you're the Wizards, it's a bad season for you at this point.
Right.
You can't
that
be a
really
second
cool.
round and out team anymore. You just at some point you have to clear the bar. I mean, and that goes for any team in Washington as a whole, which hasn't been to. I mean, you think about this. There's been no team in a conference final in Washington since 1998.
That's so
is that
crazy.
Just insane?
That's crazy. It's embarrassing.
Like by accident, you should be in a conference final in either the NHL, the NFL, the NBA, or Major League Baseball, right?
Right. It's a tough town.
And it hasn't happened.
Right. We're in a drought. And, you know, we're looking for this. And I think the Wizards, of all the professional sports franchises, I think in a sense they're like the Caps, of course, because we always know the Caps will get there. But, you know, them and the Penguins, it just seems like they cannot get past.
Right.
And here for the Wizards, it seems like the same thing. It's like we can't get out the East to go into that championship game. So I think people here, you know, we're just tired. We want something. But hopefully, I think the Wizards, you know, I tell people, you know, don't fret too much now. They're still playing good basketball without John Wall. That's a good sign. We'll have to see if that keeps up. But I don't think it's too early to hit the panic button, I think, for them. But
no, I don't think so. Yeah.
It's too early, right? I just think people here just...
But we still, it feels like with all these teams, we live in the land of, like, good but not... We live in the valley of good but not good enough. Good for the second round and out.
Right. Yeah. And that's what it always is. And I think that's why we're tired of being complacent. But we'll see what happens. NBA season, as you said, it's open. The East, I'm like you, it's not a sure lock. So you never know. I think keep faith in the Wizards. And staying on the Wizards, a player that we all know very well here in the area, Caron Butler, decided to hang it up this week. Of course, he did play for 9 teams in his 16-year NBA career, but Washington knows him very well. Who can forget the glory years that he had here with Gilbert Arenas and Antoine Jameson? And I just want to hear from you, because I know this is a player, obviously, you probably know very well from covering. I mean, can you just talk a little bit about, you know, what Caron Butler meant to this Washington franchise and the NBA as a whole as a player?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. It's sort of one of these people that we sometimes forget or we take for granted. And Caron Butler was just one of the best, forget about player, he was one of the best people.
Yeah.
And when you found out, I think Michael Lee, when we were at the Post together, and I got to spend some time with him, you find out his background and where he came from in Milwaukee and the time he spent incarcerated as a youngster, and to make of his, you know, of his life what he did, and then to, like, at no point, like, none of that stuff held him back. I mean, he overcame whatever issues, anger, otherwise, disenfranchisement, of poverty. Like, he welcomed everything else into his world. And you to this day, if you walked up to him, you would think, man, this one well-adjusted dude, he must have had a perfect upbringing. And, of course, he didn't. And the fact that, you know, it's just a testament to him, his wife, who I know. And he's one of those people who... And some of the games, I mean, he was rock solid nails. Like, Antoine Jameson and Gilbert Arenas were the scorers, but when all was said and done, Kelsey, Caron was the rock. He was the soul.
Right.
And, you know, and you could always rely on him. And so I think they knew that they were never going to be a championship team, but they felt like they were going to scale Cleveland at some point as a contender.
and they never did, and I think it kills them. And then obviously things went south with Gilbert and the guns incident.
That changed a lot. Mm-hmm.
And but I think if you ask Karan now, he really enjoyed his time in DC.
My favorite personal experience, well, obviously having him on my former radio show, and I thought I could rap, and I tried to do the 8 Eminem stuff, and I had the bars down, but I was just awful. And and Karan loved it. He's like, stand up, DC. Meanwhile, Brendan Haywood's going, you can't support this, Karan. You cannot support this. And eventually it became almost became a meme, but it's just, he's one of those guys, like, he had levity, he had smarts, he had heart. I mean, and now, you know what? Whatever he does, he's going to be successful at it.
Right.
That's how much I believe in Karan Butler. I mean, I don't care if it's broadcasting, if he went into real estate tomorrow, if he decided he wanted to own a construction firm, if he wanted to go to school to become an educator, Karan Butler is going to be successful at it. That's the kind of person he is.
Just a great all-around guy. And I have to point out, Mike, if I knew you could at least somewhat rap, I might have had you rap in your introduction when you came onto the show. But I didn't know that. I'll have to save that for next time.
I had like 14 bars for easy rap, and I just could not get any studio time, Kelsey. It would have kicked, but I just could not get the studio time. I'm sorry.
See, I might have to work with my connects next time.
Yes.
I love what you said about him, because my favorite memory of Karan Butler was I was actually in high school, and I was one of his Karan Butler's 3Ds to Succeed winner, and this was when I was a student.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's so crazy to me. I grew up in the area. I grew up watching him, and I still have the jersey that he signed, and that was one of my favorite things about him, and I always preach that about him, because I think so often, I'm sure you know this, athletes sometimes get such a negative rep, but that award, was huge. They brought cameras to my school. They filmed me going around my high school and, just talking about how I used dedication, determination, and discipline, which was his 3Ds to succeed principles to get out of his upbringing that you kind of talked about, to overcome those challenges. And a lot of ways, I compared my life to his. And I think now, it's just amazing to see what he's doing. And him as a player, of course, was great, but him as a person was even better overall. So I'm just happy to see
him. Yeah, isn't that cool, though? Like one person touches one person. And
isn't that amazing?
It's totally sentimental and sappy. I don't want to take your program into
this you're
is
good.
Up or anything. But Banana, you're so right. I mean, what he meant to you in those moments probably inspired you to do a lot of this.
Right. I mean, look where I am now. I'm covering this very team, I got the award from. And that's why, I've been blessed to be able to stay here in this area and cover the teams here, because these are the teams I grew up watching with the athletes here, that I idolized. So seeing him hang it up, it meant a lot to me personally. And, I personally wish him the best in all that he does. I'm like you. I mean, he's just a great person. And I just wish, the whole stuff with Agent Zero didn't go as it did, because I think he would have had a lot more great years here in Washington.
Yes.
But he still has a great career overall, so we have to love it. But staying in D.C., Mike, I have to ask you about the Georgetown Hoyas, who a lot of people of course, everyone was very excited when Pat Ewing became coach, but I think we all knew he had his hands full. Right now, the Hoyas are 13-10 overall. They're eighth in the Big East, but of course, they're not having the success that a lot of people wanted them to have. They have had a lot of close games, but of course, their record just kind of demonstrates you're just kind of in the middle. And of course, come March Madness time, you can't really get excited for them because they don't have the record to do anything. But I just kind of want to hear from you. What's your overall thoughts of Pat Ewing as a head coach? And is it too early to hit the panic button, as it seems a lot of fans are doing?
Yeah, are there many people hitting the panic button thinking that Georgetown's a try? I don't have the pulse maybe like you do. I was over there today because the Celtics were practicing over there. I think I was watching that Xavier game. And, they got the number 6 team in the nation on the road.
Right. Took them to overtime. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was just a killer to see them lose. But either way, you've got young players there that don't have, championship or winning experience yet at that level, and they need to develop that before they become that team. That's why they're losing a lot of these close games. I don't think you can judge Patrick Ewing, the coach, for at least 2-3 years, because I think then you get into his recruiting class, and then you can I could say, okay, these are his guys. First and foremost, for nobody else's, and this is where the program is. I think a lot of people expected
struggles this year. I don't think they thought they were going to contend for the Big East. And as it goes now, and they have to win a conference tournament to get a bid. But you know, I think it's a growth thing for many of these guys. I just
right.
don't think that they're yet there yet. And I think Patrick knows that. And it'd be interesting to see if people are patient enough to give him 2-3 years.
Right, because this
you know,
is a tough town.
It's Georgetown, you know, and people
right.
expect a lot. So
right.
They don't want to rebuild for 3 years.
Right, they want to win now. And see, when I say that,
right.
me being alum of Georgetown, all I hear all the time is, like, why aren't they winning? So I have to hear this from alumni constantly, constantly, constantly. But I'm like, you have to give them time. But in college basketball, we know it can be brutal. Of course, Georgetown, they're looking to get back for their glory years because that is the sport at Georgetown. So I just, you know, I hope his recruiting class does well. I think he's a great coach. You know, I love the video of him
yep.
that went viral of him, you know, talking to a player like, you know, if you didn't practice that shot,
why
are you taking
yeah,
it to the game?
Yeah.
That was,
I
great.
Love that.
That was great.
Yes,
so I think he's a great
also,
coach.
Mm-hmm. Also, I don't, not that I don't care if they win in the regular season, because you got to win in the regular season in college to get a decent.
Right.
I would rather see them win in March. Like that was the, I think that was the undoing of John Thompson III was
mm-hmm.
he simply couldn't get out of the first round of the tournament.
Right.
Or, you know, or years that people thought he had a decent team, couldn't get out of the second round. After he sort of created that monster for himself and went to the Final Four so early. So
right.
I guess my thing is your whole season now, especially if you're at Duke or Carolina or Kentucky, any big-time program, your whole season is judged on how you did in March, which
right.
in some ways is wrong, but that's college basketball. That's what the tournament
right.
is.
It's
and so, yes, it is. It is. I mean, you fall apart in one game, and you've got, I mean, that's why it's so exciting. You don't,
right.
you don't have these kind of upsets, and I mean, we don't even have these pairings in college football, but in basketball, you know, St. Bonaventure can knock off of Kentucky, and you see all these great upsets, and it's, you know, to be on for 6 nights over 3 weeks, that's, you know,
right.
that's a chore. So.
Right. I'm like you. I mean, I think he's doing well so far. Of course, right. I mean, he's a new coach. We all have to remember that. And right, this isn't his recruiting class, but with what he's done with them, I think, you know, it's not bad. I mean, they're playing decent basketball. And I think if you do look at a lot of their games, you brought up the Xavier game, that was such a close game. I think they should have won. It's just in overtime. They weren't that team that had been playing the rest of the game. But if you look at a lot of their games, they have lost a lot of close games. This is not a bad team. So I just tell everybody, give it time in D.C., take a breath, still rep your Hoya
right.
gear, because they're going to get better. They're only going to get better. That's how I feel about Georgetown. So
yeah.
tell everybody
yeah,
to calm down.
I'm not saying give Patrick Ewing a pass. He's
right.
got to, I mean, the guys under him have to become better players. And Jesse has become
yes.
a much better player.
Yes.
He still
mm-hmm.
needs his butt kicked every now and then. but he, you know, he's just one of the kids who you need to motivate. But
right.
but I still like what they're doing, and I see, at least give him 2 years. See,
right.
if after next year, if there is no progress in the program, you don't feel like it's somehow better, a better program than it was,
mm-hmm.
then I think you have bona fide beef, and you could say, all right, Patrick Ewing, do something for me now, or you're out your third year.
Right.
But right now, it's just too early.
Okay. And I have to ask you, Mike, I'm just curious. I mean, do you think this is a good tryout, in a sense, for him to possibly get an NBA coaching job that we all pretty much know he wants to get? Or do you think, you know, this just isn't enough yet for him to possibly get that NBA coaching job?
I think Patrick goes at some point, unless it just becomes wildly successful and
mm-hmm.
and he really likes the recruiting grind and all that, I think Patrick's going to end up in the NBA again.
Okay.
I just hope that it's in a situation where, yeah, somebody does look at him as a head coach instead of
right.
a career assistant. I thought he, you know, it's a crime the Knicks never really talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Patrick Ewing, I'm not saying you give him the job, but the fact that you don't have, he put the years in
right.
and you didn't give him a job. Like, what does that say?
Right.
So, or at least interview him and give him serious consideration. And so.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of other places he could have coached to. So I just
mm-hmm.
hope that he gets that opportunity, irrespective of what happens in Georgetown, if he wants it one day.
Right. And I think it'd be great for him. I'm like you. I mean, I'm all up for him getting hopefully that, you know, that position. And I'm like you. Hopefully it's that head coach position because I think he's proven he has what it takes. So I say give him a shot. But staying on a job, I want to move on to my Kelsey's Across the Nation segment where I want to talk about Super Bowl 52, of course, which the Philadelphia Eagles defeated the New England Patriots 41-33. But there was someone who didn't have his job that everyone's talking about. And, of course, I'm talking about Malcolm Butler. And, of course, all the speculation that has went around the whole reason why we didn't understand why he didn't take a defensive snap. I mean, it just didn't make sense to a lot of people. And he's a quarterback who played almost 98% of the regular season defensive snaps for the Patriots. But on Sunday, I mean, we saw him crying during the national anthem. And, of course, we understood why when he didn't play. And just curious to hear from you. I mean, what do you think of this whole Malcolm Butler benching situation?
I still am I'm mystified by it. I mean, Malcolm shot down all the reports that he may have had marijuana in his room, or he may have missed curfew, or
right.
But Malcolm Butler, and you know, I'm going to take him at his word unless somebody comes up with proof otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still mystified by it. Was this sort of Bill Belichick being Bill Belichick, where he's just
right.
no guy is greater than the team, and I don't think this package gives it. But I can't. I have to believe in something else. If a guy did that much for you during the regular
right.
season, and you just thought you could get away with him not playing for
right.
that game. And so, you know, he's got to, you know, Belichick's got to live with it. Malcolm Butler's got to live with it. I think it's unfortunate. No one's going to question Belichick because he got, or, you know, that long about it because he got such a long track record. And oh, you can't imagine the players they've let go, like that you thought were going to be core Patriots forever. You know, the Lawyer Malloys,
right.
Troy
mm-hmm.
Brown, shoot. God, I'm thinking of somebody that, not Rodney Harrison, but somebody else where you thought, oh, no, that guy's going to be around for a while. Shoot.
Right, and
all
of a sudden they're gone.
So,
yep.
And then they end up, and the Patriots always seem to get rid of a guy, you know, before he, you know, on the downside almost. But I still think, you know, at some point, like, you need a better explanation than we've been given.
Right, and that's why we're all lost.
And
right.
I don't know if, does he win the Super Bowl for him? Maybe. But
right.
the fact that he already won one for you.
That should be enough, right?
My thing is, you got a reservoir of goodwill already. You don't
right.
win that Super Bowl if he doesn't step in front of that pass, right?
Right. So of all people, you would think he gets, you know, the upper benefit of the doubt. That's why it didn't make any
yeah.
sense to anybody.
He was the difference between you. Already, he's the difference between you being 4-3 in the Super Bowl and 5-2,
mm-hmm.
which is a pretty big swing in
right.
terms of what people remember about you. And so,
mm-hmm.
and so I just, yeah, I don't know. It's a hard
yeah.
one.
It's okay.
Hard
We're
one.
All
I mean,
lost still.
Yeah, I
and
wish
we
I could
really
get
just
some insight on it. I just
yeah.
think, and I'm not saying that Belichick had to break his own code or rules. I just think when it comes out, it better be something pretty serious.
Right,
because
for him.
Otherwise,
no.
it doesn't make any sense.
Right, and it's going
it
to be something that, you know, they're always going to be questioned about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bench him for a quarter. You got in late one night, bench him for a quarter or whatever.
Right, it's the Super Bowl. It's the Super Bowl, right? I'm like you. You know, if it was something
yeah.
like that, like a curfew, right? Bench him for right, just
yeah.
a quarter or something. Not
I mean,
a whole game.
Smallpox, if he had smallpox, then he was going to affect the whole team. Okay, I get it.
Right.
Keep him
right.
off the field. But other than that, no.
I'm completely like
that's,
you. I just,
that's
it didn't make
that's
sense.
That's a joke, Kelsey. You can laugh.
Oh.
At that.
I'm just kidding.
Go ahead.
Oh my gosh, too funny. But another thing that, you know, a lot of people are just still lost about,
yeah.
Mike, during the football season
yes.
was this controversial catch rule that it seems like nobody, Mike, still knows what a catch is now in the NFL. And, of course, we saw it during the Super Bowl. Zach Ertz's game-winning touchdown catch in the fourth quarter was when it really came up to debate. So I just kind of want to hear from you. I mean, what do you think the NFL competition committee needs to do to hopefully get fans back to a feeling where they understand what a catch is in the NFL?
I just, it's almost like the eye test. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, maybe, like, for instance, I thought both those catches were touchdowns.
Right.
I thought Zach Ertz had crossed the plane of the goal, irrespective of the fact that it hit the ground and he caught it on the way down. But his whole the whole deal with these guys reaching out is if we can cross the plane of the goal before we get to the pylon or across the line of scrimmage, when all these line is there, you put the ball across and you're in. You know, you scored, not your whole body. And
right.
So if that's the touchdown, that's the plane of the goal, like, who cares what happens after that?
Right.
The other one, did he bobble? I don't know. It wasn't like he kept throwing it five times on his – I just gave it to the eye test. And, I still think that that's dying. You know, I would have given it to him.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, I'm not a Cowboys guy, but I just thought that Brian gets the back, that was a catch. And
right.
It was a phenomenal catch. It was like if Lynn Swann – let's put it this way. Lynn Swann and the Pittsburgh Steelers are legendary because of that catch against the Cowboys when they won 35-31, and he bobbled three times. Is that a catch now? I don't know. I don't know. Did it get close to the ground? Like,
my whole thing is, okay. I just didn't know that, I always heard that the ground can't cause a fumble, but it can cause an incomplete pass now. And it just
right.
makes no sense to me.
Right.
Like,
and
that?
You and a lot of us. We're all like, what? And I think that's a problem.
Help you catch the ball, but
right.
you got your hands around it.
Underneath.
And so what if it touched the ground? Like, so
right.
what if you got your hands around it, you're in possession of the ball.
And you're controlling it, right.
And the fact that you can't let any part of the ball touch the ground,
somebody's going to get busted wrist just trying to tuck it in.
Right, just to get it in. And that's what I'm saying, then you make more problems.
At some point. And in this league, too. I mean, it's all offense now. It's all
right.
about, can we score? Can we go down the field? Run pass option. And
right.
if you don't straighten out that rule, or you don't start allowing some of these catches that I don't believe are catches, you
right.
put yourself in a load.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't hand your league over to the replay altogether.
Right.
You do that,
right.
and there's no smell test by officials, you just... You're defeating the purpose of sports. You're just putting it in
right.
the computer's hands.
Exactly,
so.
And that's the problem. I think that's why everybody's frustrated. You want to watch a game, and you want to know a catch is a catch. Because now I think everybody is probably at their Super Bowl parties looking at each other like, wait, okay, let's go from A to Z, talk about how it's a catch or if it's not a catch. That's too much.
Yeah.
I think just keep it simple. That's what everybody wants, And then the players, it seems like they don't even know. You saw them on the sidelines, It's become that complicated, and you never want your sport to become that complicated because then I think it hurts your game to the fans. Right, and football
right.
is a simple game, right? And I think, I think anybody can understand football if they really, want to. But the catch rule, you have people who are analysts who are even we don't even know. That's not good. That's not good. So
no.
hopefully, they just make it something where everyone can understand. Oh my gosh! But moving on from that, because it just got me tired, Mike. Everybody's also talking about Nick Foles and what's next for the MVP Super Bowl winning quarterback. So, I know this is a big one for you, but I'm just curious to hear from you. What do you think the Eagles should do with Nick Foles now?
Put him in bronze outside the stadium.
He deserves it.
And so people can just, touch him and say good luck. And, what do you do with Nick Foles? I don't think it's bad to have an embarrassment of riches. You have control of him. He can obviously, he's going to bring something in a trade. I don't know if I should move him. I don't know how this is a tough one. I don't think there's a Carson Wentz, Nick Foles debate or anything right now.
Right. Carson was magnificent.
I don't know. You can't get rid of Carson Wentz.
Right.
Because he's your future. And you also, why would you get rid of Nick Foles right now? You're just going to have a Super Bowl winning, career. I mean, it's a career defining moment. And so I think Nick Foles is insurance. And if he wants to become a starter in this league again, and Carson Wentz performs like he has, and he doesn't get that opportunity. At some point, you make Nick Foles happy and you part with him, but not before he is your backup quarterback in a way that Steve Young was Joe Montana's backup quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got that kind of – if Nick Foles is that – maybe he's not Steve Young caliber, but he's certainly better than Jeff Hostetler was when he led the Giants to a Super Bowl and Phil Simms' absence when Phil Simms got hurt. I think you hang on to Nick Foles if you've got control of him contractually for a while. And so that's just me. I don't know. It doesn't make for an awkward training camp and competition. Fine. That's what sports is. It's all competition. Carson Wentz might need someone to push him. And Nick Foles seems like the guy, if he's not starting, he's going to be as supportive as possible of who is starting. So
right,
I don't
right.
know if you've got like a you don't have a prima donna in your midst right now.
Right, they seem to work well together.
If you don't have a prima donna in your midst, why not make him? You know, why not bring him back? Shoot, for good luck and goodwill alone. You know how many people are gonna show up on fan day and say, Nick Foles, you made the memory of my life.
Right.
And by the way, Carson, that was great last week. You passed for 400 yards, but nothing less.
Right.
Nick Foles,
right.
you took serious B&I in February. You just did, and I want you to know you made my grandfather happy, and he's been desperate for this. But you know, so like really Philly fan, I don't know. You know, if you're a Philly fan, do you want to see Nick Foles not on your training camp sideline in July? No,
right
there.
Right. I'm like you. I think it can work. And it's, I will say Carson Wentz and Nick Foles have a unique relationship, like you said, where it seems like it's working. It's working.
Yeah.
And, of course, I mean, what Nick Foles did was, it was amazing to watch, right? You're going against Tom Brady, the GOAT.
Oh, tremendous.
It was great. I mean, and like you said, and I just love, and I also love how they're both connected by their Christian faith. I mean, they seem like they have a lot of stuff in common. But, I mean, Nick Foles stepped up when he needed to. But, of course, like you said, you can't forget Carson Wentz, who had a spectacular year himself and really got the Eagles to that point. And then Nick Foles just finished the job. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But, of course, you want to keep both of them happy. But right now they both still do seem happy. But, of course, I know every Philadelphia fan will be watching to see. Because, of course, just in case something does happen with Carson Wentz again, you do want a solid backup to lead your team. Because Philly, they want to go back. They want to go back to the Super Bowl. Who knows if they will.
Yep, no, you're right.
You're
right. What did you think of Tony Dungy's comments about Nick Foles, which
came
under fire by a lot of people?
He did. And I think we both know this. I think you have to be very careful with religion because it's kind of like race in the sense that when you bring up race, you know, you can touch a lot of people the wrong way. I think it's the same thing with religion. I thought what Tony Dungy said was great. He thought it was their Christian faith that got him to that point. But, of course, many people are going to – unfortunately, people who don't believe in religion, you know, will say, no, it had nothing to do with that.
I think anybody that has belief in a higher power and it helps do I think that, you know, if he's weighing scales and he's going, okay, Middle East peace and Super Bowl, and which one is going to get more attention? Probably Middle East peace. But nonetheless, like if someone says that they, you know, their higher power helped them in a tough professional moment, whether it's football or accounting, like I have no problem with that.
The only problem
I have is and I even tweeted Tony Dungy this, and he tweeted me back, was I said, look, I have no problem with that as long as you would be comfortable saying that about somebody, like, let's say Nick Foles was strong, had a strong conviction in the Jewish faith or the Muslim faith. My own personal feelings, having grown up in Episcopal Church and being considered myself Christian, I just am also one of these people, like, you have to respect everybody else's religion, too, and so, therefore, if you're going to say that about Nick Foles and his Christian faith, you should be able to say that about anybody in their Muslim or Jewish faith or non-denominational faith.
Right.
Because
that's a great point.
Someone told me once, you know, he goes, man, you don't need to believe in, you don't have to be spiritual to be my friend. You don't even have to believe in God. You just have to know you're not him.
Wow.
And I believe that.
That's such a great point, though, that you brought up.
At some point, the squirrel in the park could be your higher power because he could make better decisions about your life than you could.
That just tells you. You know what I mean? But that just tells you how people get.
That's another show. No,
I love that you brought that up, though, and I'm glad that you're not afraid to talk about that because I think when it comes to religion, I think you make a great point in the fact that I think, of course, Christianity is huge in this country. But if let's say it weren't the largest religion in this country, and let's say it was the Muslim faith, you know, would we still hear people talking about that on television, and would we still see a lot of people agreeing about that? You know, that's such a great point that you made, and I think, you know, that's something that, especially as sports change and we see more culture and diversity, you know, integrating sports, it'll be an interesting conversation, you know, to have. Like I know, for instance, what comes to mind is the Knicks in the prayer room, right, that they made for the player who's Muslim. And I thought that was a great story. But also I read comments and you wouldn't believe, and maybe you could believe just some of the comments I read, you know, of people who didn't agree with this faith and just the comments that they put on it. And I'm like, I think it's great. You know, they're doing something for his religion and his faith. I thought it was, you know, so great. But I just think every time you bring it up, Mike, you're always going to have those people, you know, who get touchy-feely about it. It's just what it is, right? It's religion. People get very touchy-feely about
it. It's a third rail in sports, especially.
It is.
You can alienate or bond with someone so quickly. There's enough polarization in this world as it is. We don't need to pull apart
anymore. Oh, my gosh. It's so much. You came on for a busy show. So much to talk about. But I also, staying on the Super Bowl, I want to talk to you about the White House visit, of course, that comes up once you win the biggest game of the year. And the Eagles are already making headlines for those who said they will not be going to the White House. We have Eagles safety Malcolm Jenkins, who told that to CNN on Monday that he'll be skipping, and he's not the only one. Also, wide receiver Torrey Smith said last week that he would not go if the opportunity arose. And last but not least was Eagles defensive end Chris Long, who was invited last year, right, as a member of the New England Patriots, and he's back this year for the Philadelphia Eagles, and he said he's not going to go again. So I just kind of want to hear from you. I think it's no big surprise that players are not going, but I mean, do you think, let me ask you this, since the anthem protests, of course, died down in the NFL, do you think this is kind of the new way for players to speak on what they don't think is right in this country by skipping the White House visit?
I wouldn't go that far, but I think it means they want to stand for something. And I've got, irrespective of how I feel, anybody feels about the current administration, if you want to express yourself, I thought at the time Tim Thomas, the Boston Bruins goalie, was a little petty when he didn't show up in 2010 because he didn't believe in Obama's policies and everything. And then I also thought about it later, and I go, well, hold up. Like, if that's his way of protesting or saying that this something bothers me and I want to let you know, who am I to say, you can't say me? I mean, my biggest thing is this. As writers, as media people, in society in general, we harped on, Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, every player that came after socially conscious players to say, well, you don't stand for anything, you stand for yourself. And what do you, you gave the African-American athlete a blueprint for economic success, but did you really do right by your community, like Ali and Michael and those guys were forced to say, well, one, that fight isn't happening right now, but two, I'm doing other things. And however you felt about it, it's true. The notion that you could be political as a person that plays sports was something that nobody wanted to be part of. And now you have this renaissance of social conscience, and people are saying, I just want sports. You can't have it both ways.
Right.
Either your athletes are allowed to use their platform to speak out, which a lot of us criticize Jordan and Tiger and others for not doing for years, and just being beholden to their corporate interests. And, so my feeling is I'm completely okay with it.
Okay.
Adam Silver told me in an interview, the NBA commissioner, a little bit over a year ago, Kelsey, that he thought the Warriors were talking, players were talking about not going if they won. He was basically saying you should go because if you have a disagreement over policies, politics, what better way to express those feelings than someone straight face to face? But the bottom line is you're never going to get that opportunity in that situation.
Right, it's a picture opportunity.
None of your people are going to make that possible. So, if you want to, now I will say this: my sister, God bless her, she's more left wing than Michael Moore or any. She makes D. Ray McKesson look Republican. She's so left wing. I can't tell you.
Wow.
She was not going to go to the White House when a friend of mine somehow got us into the West Wing when George Bush was president. She got us to the West Wing at a night tour. And it was like, her name's Valeska. I said, we could see the Oval Office. We could, what are you talking about? She's going, And all of a sudden, she finally gives in and goes. And she gets out of there. She's emotional because, it wasn't about George Bush. It was about the office of the President of the United States, which was held by, 40-something other people before him. And it was a part of our history and our country. And that's why you should go to the White House. That's why I would go to the White House. But I also, look,
I'm of the same mind of these athletes. If mm-hmm. that's how you feel and that's where you want to make a difference, go
right.
for it.
Right.
Who am I to tell you not to?
Right. I think it's such an interesting, you know, and like you, I mean, I've covered when athletes go to the White House. The one that comes to mind for me was when Jake Arrieta skipped out when President Obama, you know, was in the White House,
right.
of course. Same thing. He had got a lot of backlash. And I remember that. Like, everybody, that's the first thing everyone noticed. And I think, you know, I feel like I'm in the middle for this. I think, you know, if that's your stand, you know, that's your right. I think, you know, not to not go. But kind of like what you were saying, I mean, it is the White House. And, I mean, yes, you know, we can say that you can talk about it face-to-face. But I think we both know when you go there, it's a picture opportunity. And it's a cool time, you know, to bring your wife and your family, you know, whoever they are bringing with them to the White House. But I think, you know, more and more, and I think as sports go on, I think we're going to see more athletes, you know, doing this and skipping out. And of course, for us, it's always a media story, but I always want to hear why from them, you know, not that you're just skipping out, but specifically why. And I hope they're not, you know, ever afraid to speak on it. But, you know, I will also be interested to hear what the White House has to say about the players that are skipping.
Oh, he's just going to kill them. They're just gonna
I'm sure.
Them.
Right. You know, that's going to be a big
Warriors.
Headline.
Yeah. But I love
always,
that story too. Like, sort of like Steph Curry. I don't want to go. Well,
yes. Oh, my gosh. It was
then,
huge,
then,
right?
Then, then President Trump. Well,
right. Just going back and
anyway.
Forth.
You weren't invited anywhere. Like,
right.
You can't disinvite me. I was going to go to the game. It was great. It was sort of
that was hilarious.
To face.
Right.
Trying to save face. Like, you asked the girl to the prom. She said no. But then you pretend like you didn't ask her. Okay. Stop
right.
It.
Or you're going to say, I wasn't going anyways, right? Like,
right.
It's just,
right.
It was crazy. But it's a good story for us, so I can't complain about
yes.
it, right?
Oh, I'm telling you,
oh
I went to a lunch with a former editor of the Washington Post, and he goes, I go, hey, the paper's doing great. And he goes, well, look, let's be clear. He goes, Trump might be bad for our country, but he's damn good for the media right now. He's selling papers.
Oh, well, there, I mean, hey, media, I mean, what it sells, right?
It's so funny.
It gets
like there's this love-hate relationship there, you know, which I think mm-hmm. is hilarious. So.
Right.
Anyway.
I mean, it's always about those. No, you're right. It's always about those big headlines, just like today. Just like on Thursday, we know the big headline was what? The NBA trade deadline. So we have to go to Cleveland, Mike. I can't let you go without us talking about Cleveland because everything just went crazy on Thursday. Before the Cavaliers won that amazing overtime game in which, of course, LeBron James made that game-winning shot. I mean, it was so much negativity. You have people saying, you know, LeBron James was the biggest problem in Cleveland. Somebody said that LeBron's the only reason the Cleveland Cavaliers aren't the Cleveland Browns. Nick Wright said that. I mean, it's so much going on in Cleveland. And then the trade deadline comes, Mike, and oh, my gosh, we have Isaiah Thomas gone, Dwayne Wade gone, Derrick Rose, Amon Shumpert, Jay Crowder, and Channing Frye. And then they pick up Larry Nance Jr., Jordan Clarkson, George Hill, and Rodney Hood. I mean, do you think this was the right thing to do to Cleveland? I mean, is willing and dealing away everybody, it seems like, almost on the team, the right decision? Or do you think, you know, they just hit the panic button way too fast and it's not going to do anything for them?
I think for Cleveland, it was the only decision mm-hmm. if you were going to keep, if you had any thought of keeping LeBron James. Mm-hmm. Because this was an admission earlier than later that the Kyrie Irving deal did not work out.
Right, right.
And whatever you say about that, good, bad, indifferent, you sort of said, okay, Isaiah Thomas was the linchpin in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not – he puts in 15 games, he did not help us. We're 13-19, or, you know, lost 13 of our last 19 games. We are not a team that's going to go back to the finals. And
right.
The only way you're going to – keep LeBron James interested in remaining Cleveland and salvage your season at the same time, if you're Dan Gilbert, is you got to blow up the ship. You got to back up the truck. And he did. And it, in a weird way, like, people think, oh, you know, Dwayne Wade thing was, you know, a shot at the bow. No, that probably made LeBron happier than anything. Because LeBron James is closer to Dwayne Wade than anybody. Everybody knew Dwayne Wade wanted to go back to Miami.
Right.
And so that. So the fact that you did that, I think, in a weird way, I think that move carries as much weight as almost any of them, and for LeBron. And so, do I think LeBron James is going to go back to Cleveland? I'd say it's probably 60-40 that he goes back right
okay.
now. But I doubt if he's going to go back to Western Conference team.
Right.
I don't think he's going to go back to Cleveland because. Are you gonna really scale the Warriors over the next
3 to 4 years if they stay together. Are you really going to do it? I don't see you doing that. That's just
right.
me.
Right.
And so if you can just still get to the finals in the East, and anything can happen in the NBA finals, why wouldn't you stay in the Eastern Conference if you're LeBron James? I would. I mean, that's just me. And if your mindset is geared toward, and I know his mindset is geared toward this, winning championships and legacy, he wants to be considered the greatest of all time.
Right.
I know some
right.
people think that's complete heresy, and I covered Michael Jordan up close. I know that Michael Jordan is the most dynamic, exciting, clutch player I ever covered. If LeBron mm-hmm. James wins a couple more championships and with the longevity he has, yes, trust me, from my recollection, he has not retired once, let alone twice during his mm-hmm. career in the middle of it. I don't think you can say Michael Jordan's the greatest player of all time. And if that mm-hmm. happens in 2 or 3 years. And so
right.
What I'm getting at is LeBron James isn't going to a place that he has to rebuild. He's not going to a place where he has to recruit players like he did
okay.
in Miami or something.
Right.
He's going to a ready-made championship team and or ready-made contender. And if you think that your best chances of that are in the Eastern Conference and in Cleveland, why wouldn't you stay there? So that's my 2 cents on that. And Dan Gilbert had to do that.
Good.
It was a half-court heave, and whether you – time will tell whether it was too fast and whatnot, but whatever. Isaiah Thomas was not fitting in, and it was not working out for you. And
right.
look, you probably should have never traded away Kyrie, but you did. So here
right.
you are.
And Kyrie's thriving, obviously, in Boston. And right, Isaiah Thomas, it was so promising.
Candidate. I mean, he's right there. Quite hard, he's probably going to get it. But you know, Kyrie would be my number two or three pick right now.
Wow. What do you think he thought when he saw all this going on in Cleveland? Do you think he felt like
well,
he dodged a bullet?
Well, I'm going to talk to him tonight, and I'm going to ask him. I'm sure other people will, too. It'll be very interesting to hear Kyrie's thoughts on this. My guess is he's going to remain quiet and he's going to be as classy as he can be, but down deep he's going
right, and we're all probably doing that with him because I remember he got so much flack for making that move, and then now look, he's the one that's leading
right.
the team, so
right.
oh my
he's,
gosh
nobody's trying to blow up the Celtics, are they?
Right. But, you know, I have to ask you, too. A lot of people were surprised Tristan Thompson wasn't traded. Did that surprise you at all, Mike?
I don't know what kind of value he had. I don't know what kind of value he had on the open market and what you could get for him. I love Tristan Thompson when he's motivated. Maybe playing alongside Larry Nance and these other guys that have a little more defensive fire in them lights a fire under him. So we'll
right.
see.
Right.
If not,
I think you make such a good point. Because I'm like you. I think when he plays well, he plays well. But, of course, as of late, I think a lot of people are asking, you know, Tristan, where are you? We need you to step up. But I think the move made sense in a sense that before the trade, the roster contained no rotation member under the age of 26, but they had 7 over age 30. So, of course, I think we see that Cleveland was in a rebuilding state in that sense, and they knew it wasn't going right. And I think Isaiah Thomas, a lot of people are saying he got traded because he spoke out about it. Morris here for the Wizards said, you know, he thinks he got traded because, you know, he was pretty much loud about what wasn't going right in Cleveland. Isaiah Thomas did not hold back, and sure enough, that was, like, the first big news we got.
I mean, look, Derrick Rose, Dwayne Wade, like, I love those guys. The Cavs are like, you know, they're running a Legends tour. Like, you had to get younger. You had to get more athletic. You had to get some energy in that locker room and in that court. And there wasn't that. It was a lackadaisical, lethargic roster that really stopped playing together like they had earlier in the season.
Right. So I have to ask you, before we end up, do you think with the new roster that they have, do you still think Cleveland is the team to get through in the East, or is it Boston?
Kelsey, until LeBron James is knocked off his perch, I am not betting against LeBron James. I just can't. I don't care who's on the floor with them. I don't care how they do it. When you
just believe in the
king. When you go to 7 straight finals and no one has knocked you off the perch yet. This would be 4 with Cleveland, 4 straight with Cleveland since he's been back. He went to 4 with Miami when he got there. I mean, so I can't bet against LeBron right now.
Right, right. I mean, I can't blame you.
My answer is yes, Cleveland is still the favorite.
Okay. And last but not least,
even
because
I
know
I picked the Wizards at the first of the year in my ESPN prediction thing.
I'm proud of you doing that.
Because I'm such a homer. I mean,
me too. That's why I probably would have done the same thing. And because I'm a homer and I can't let you go from the show without asking you this, because I actually have had people ask me and they wanted me to ask you this. Do you think LeBron James would ever in some world end up in Washington?
Yes, he would. And it would be in a fantasy world in which we all...
See, I knew something was coming after that.
I mean, I don't know. It's like, shoot, if I'm LeBron James and things aren't going well in Cleveland, say they get knocked out early this year and he doesn't feel like there's a future there, you know, I'm looking at, okay, here's the best teams that I think I could bring. I could go on that team and win a title with.
Right.
Washington Wizards would be one of them. The Philadelphia 76ers would be one of them, to be honest.
Yeah.
That young team, I mean, that team might be 2 years away from a title if they have. Then LeBron James, oh my goodness. You could probably take LeBron James and put him on 10 different teams, and you could say, that's, if not a championship team, that's an NBA finalist. And you just could do that. And shoot, you know, what if he went on the Rockets? I mean, they probably not got to be worse.
So, you know, all these things are all hypotheticals.
Right.
But it's such a far, you know, like, what kind of money? They're not going to have the money. LeBron James is still going to want to get paid.
Right.
They're not going to have the money. And would he come here and play with those guys? Maybe. But, I mean, you know what I foresee Kevin Durant pulling a LeBron James where after he wins a couple titles somewhere else, he goes back home.
Oh, my gosh.
So
he just made everyone
KD
happy.
Like, can you imagine that KD wins two or three in Golden State and whatever. He's got an option year. I don't know which one of yours is. And he goes, you know what? I want to finish my career saying I brought a championship back to the city of Washington.
That would be so huge.
That would. So I see Kevin Durant back here before I see LeBron James.
Oh, my God.
But that's
just
me, and I live in fantasy world, so don't listen to me.
I'm telling you, you made a lot of people happy right now. Mike, thank you so much for coming on. It was a blast.
I'm glad we finally caught up, and continued success, and, you know, I love what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, and thanks for joining us.
All right, Kelsey, take care.
Thanks, bye. All right, that's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNicoleNelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until next week, when I welcome back another special guest, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously, because there's always another play.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with KNN from venues around the region, email Kelsey at KelseyNelson@FoxSports1340AM.com. For more information about Listen In with KNN, visit FoxSports1340AM.com. Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.